in the course of preparing my study of gathering citations for the article that I contributed, the sub-article, to one of the articles on Wikipedia called 100% Renewable Energy, when the bot, because they have bots scouring all of the articles to make sure they meet with certain minimum guidelines, when the bot came by and decided that I had no citations in my article, meaning I had no links to external sources of information, you know, it wasn't enough that I was linking to Wikipedia articles, in-house citations, but that wasn't good enough. Plus, it wasn't a citation. I simply linked to it. So they consider citations, by definition, to be external sources of information that are reputable. So I, in the course of thinking, okay, I should at least try to satisfy their conditions, or else my article is going to be wiped out, my contribution to the article. So I started looking up the topics required that I knew I had to cite and that I could cite to meet with their minimum requirements, and I learned something that I'd never learned before. I learned the nature of the trigonometric functions of sine and cosine and how they define real power and reactive power at the four major quadrant positions of a cycle of oscillation, namely at 0 degrees, 90 degrees, 180 degrees, 270 degrees. At those four points of the and a cycle is like, you know, it doesn't have to be a spatial thing. This is just a concept that is applicable to time, because it's the position of the cycle within the framework of one oscillation in time, which may or may not have its corollary in space. Although you would think it expresses there, and it probably does, but it won't be helical. It won't be circular, I mean to say, because you know, it doesn't have to be a sine wave, right? A sine wave is a helical waveform, but so that it's very easy to see, oh yeah, you take the circle of time and apply it to the helical space, and actually the helical coil of the pathway of a sine wave in space is very similar to a circle. If you look down the pathway of a helical path, you see a circle, because you're seeing it in two dimensions, and it looks like a circle. And if you look at the helical pathway sideways on the side, it looks like, you know, what we normally recognize as a sine wave function. It just goes up and down. It wiggles in nice, smooth arcs. Well, when I learned that, and I did a table in my mind of I actually wrote it down on paper, because I had to figure it out and then see it. And so I even overly justify my point of view by overly doing double duty in order for to make sure that I had everything right, I did the two versions of 90 degrees. I did, you know, the negative 90 as 270, and I also did 270. Actually, I didn't do the two versions of positive 90. I did the two versions of the opposite position to the circle of oscillation, opposite to positive 90 degrees. I did negative 90, because nobody ever uses 270, even though mathematically it works out. But I just wanted to be sure there was no discrepancy, so I did both 270 and negative 90 when I did either one, just to make sure I understood what was going on. And, you know, I could have done negative 270 for that matter, but I didn't think of it, because nobody uses that. See, I use 270. That's why I had to do both 270, my version, as well as everybody else's negative 90. But nobody does negative 270. I don't do it. Nobody else does it, so I didn't bother with it. But I should add that in now that I think of it, just to be complete. And I should do negative 180. And I should do negative 0. Just to see, out of curiosity, if I come up with the same answer as positive 0 and positive 180. And I should. theoretically, but I should try it just to be on the safe side to see if the math really works out. Because so far it does. The sine value matches up logistically with the correct degree value in terms of the concept. So trigonometry really does work as a way of defining real power and reactive power in a very cogent fashion. And I really like it because it's hard to understand free energy. It's hard to explain it to somebody if you don't understand it yourself, because they don't either, and nobody does. Well, when you look at it in terms of trigonometry, it's as easy as pie. The trigonometric functions of sine and cosine for the four quadrant positions of a circle of oscillation, it is so easy to see what's going on. It's simple conversion. That's all it is. Well, it's more than that, but this is one part of it, of free energy, is the fact of conversion, which is, everybody recognizes, is okay. They accept conversion. It's always acceptable to accept conversion of one form of energy into another form of energy, because you haven't lost anything. You simply converted it from one format to another format. Well, just to give you one example, when you take the, first I got to preface myself. So all of the real power points on the circle of oscillation for real, you know, all of the four points of the degrees of a circle, you know, 0 degrees, you know, 90 degrees, 180 degrees, 270 degrees, all those four points within the realm of real power is related to the cosine function, while all those four points of the circle of oscillation related to reactive power is defined by the sine function. So you do the sine function for the four quadrant positions of the circle of oscillation for reactive power, and then you do the cosine function for those same degree angles of angular positions for real power. And you get and then you map it out in a nice, neat table. You get a very interesting consequence that you can see right away. If it comes to you that way, it came to me. And that is, when you take the cosine function of 180 degrees, the result of taking the trigonometric function is the power factor for that position on the circle. So that's the relevance of using trigonometry, is they already use it and they call it the power factor. So if they want to adjust a particular instance of energy which has a certain power factor, they use certain techniques, and then they know when they do the diagnostic recheck to see how they've done, they use trigonometry to tell them what they've done. So if you take the trigonometric cosine function for 180 degrees, which represents current separated from voltage by 180 degrees, that's, they're out of phase, because that's what it means. That's what the four quadrant positions of a circle are being used for, is the phase shift between current and voltage, or more accurately, we should be saying the magnetomotive force and the electromotive force, but we don't say that. We just say, in terms of how we measure those forces, current and voltage, rather than magnetomotive force and the electromotive force. But that's okay. We can allow that sloppiness of speech and thinking, because it still gets the message across when we say current and voltage, you know, whatever. So when current and voltage are separated by one half cycle of oscillation, which is the way I prefer to call it, plain English, and most people don't think of degrees because they don't think that trigonometry is involved. Who thinks about it, you know? You'd have to be an engineer to think of it. So when you get a half cycle of oscillation separating current from voltage, an interesting thing happens on the way to the forum. That's the title of a movie, a very wacky movie from the 60s, I think, the late 60s. Or early 70s with Zero Mostel and Jack Gilford. If you know these people, if you're old enough to remember them. So where was I? So if you have that 180 degree separation and you're talking about real power, then the result is a -1 power factor. Now, if you look, go on the other side of the chart, the next column into with reactive power. If you do the that was the cosine function of 180 degrees. If you do the sine function for 180 degrees, now you're looking at the reactive power angle of vision, because power is always apparent power, usually always. It's a combination of both real and reactive, and they call that apparent. So it's good, you know, if you want to look at the whole picture, to do both aspects of apparent power. So if we do the real, that gives us one result. It gives us negative one power factor. But if we do the same thing, the sine function on 180 degrees to find out what's happening in the reactive barrio, shall we say, of apparent power, then we get something else. It's very interesting. What do we get? we get zero. We get zero power factor. Now, what that means is, but see, the only way to get that 180 degree separation between current and voltage is to add, in the real world, you know, when it comes time to do this, you add or combine, I should say, or add, mathematically add or combine, physically combine, the simultaneous union in time of the 90 degree shift in the real world of real power, or of real power, making use of a capacitor, you know, shifting current forward by 90 degrees relative to voltage, plus an inductor shifting current backwards by 90 degrees at the same time, so that there's 180 degrees separation between them, even though they're now parallel to real power when it's in sync, namely, you know, 0 degrees of separation between current and voltage. So even though it's, you know, at a funny angle of in parallel to the circle of orientation that we use, you know, 0 degrees of phase separation is our the root of our perspective. Still, nonetheless, the current is out of phase with itself by 180 degrees, and that's enough to create a condition for itself of, even though it does not have that relationship with voltage per se, you know, from our perspective, looking from the outside, but from the inside, it doesn't know any differently. It actually thinks it's being separated from voltage, because current is really a different way of talking about voltage anyway. And that's the problem where the confusion, I forgot to mention that in my essay. That's where the confusion arises, because voltage divided by resistance is what current is. And so current is simply a shorthand way of noting what's really happening is something slightly more complicated, in which you're taking voltage and dividing it by resistance. Now, this is another form of voltage. It's not the form that's being applied. It's the form that's reacting from the application of voltage. So we end up, when we do the Ohm's law, what's the equation for power? It's no longer the simplistic voltage times current, because now we've eliminated current from our perspective, because we know it's just shorthand for voltage divided by resistance. So when we replace current with its true definition, which is voltage divided by resistance, now we have voltage squared divided by resistance equals power. So we really, current doesn't exist, but time exists, and that's why we have current. Because when we resist voltage by mathematically dividing resistance into voltage, now we get a change in voltage over time, which is what current is. While applied voltage that started the whole thing does not change over time, because it's not considered as a factor which changes from one point of time to the next, except as an interaction among components. You know, they'll change their voltages so that when they act on each other, it changes what voltage is being applied to each component. Whereas initially, when we give voltage, it's simply voltage applied. So it gets complicated, you know, from the source, from the voltage source. It gets complicated. Anywho, we have to take all of this into consideration when we're trying to look at the situation. You know, what is free energy? Well, it's the conversion of reactive power into real power. That's what it is. And it's And we can only do that because we've combined two reactive forces simultaneously that are in opposition to each other. And we're also taking into account that current, which is what, reactive power is defined in terms of leading or lagging current. Current is nothing more than voltage divided by resistance. So we never had this foreign element of current in the first place. It's a fiction. That's what makes it foreign, because it's not real. It's not the way things really are. So it's not accurate, maybe, because real is already used for something else, real power. It's not accurate. So we get all these complications of what really is happening, and it confuses people because they don't consider how complicated it is. You know, I knew in my heart that free energy is real, a realistic assessment of the entire situation along with everything else that's not free energy, but who takes the trouble to learn electrical engineering but from a different standpoint of agenda? You know, I don't have an agenda to suppress free energy. I have the agenda to raise it up in front of everybody's fat little nose, their prominent proboscis of pride and pomposity and, oh, I know everything. Yeah, right. Well, you don't. You think you do, but you don't really think about what you know and do it in a way that you form your own opinion instead of just parroting what you've been told to think, you know, about what you've been taught, you know, what opinion to draw from, to conclude from what you've been taught. Well, I form my own opinions. I've done this all my life, so I'm free to choose my own opinion and yet take the same information, the same facts that electrical engineers are taught as students of that topic, and yet come to a vastly different conclusion than they are taught to come to. Well, that's my choice, you know, to free myself from the fetters of marching to the step that everybody else marches to. You know, who cares? Who gives a shit? So I want to form my own opinion, thank you very much, because I'm responsible for my opinion. Nobody else is but me. You know, if I make the mistake of parroting somebody else's error of judgment, that's my fault. That's not their fault, because I never bothered to check their references to form my own opinion. See, so it is my fault because I'm lazy. And it takes more time to learn this way. When I did this in school, it put me behind the class. So I could never get beyond a C because I was doing double duty. I was doing what the teacher should have given us the time to do. But she, oh, no, we got to rush through this. We got so much stuff to cover, and we just breezed through it, and nobody understood anything, let alone remembered anything, because they didn't understand it. How can you remember if you don't understand? Well, once I understand something, I don't forget it, because I know it now from all aspects, from all perspectives. I've thoroughly looked at it from every angle possible so that I know how it connects with everything else. So how can I forget it? Because now I thoroughly understand it. And that's the way it is with free energy. All we're doing is simple conversion from reactive power into real power, because we've combined two reactive forces simultaneously that are in opposition to each other. The capacitive force of capacitive reactants and the inductive force of inductive reactants. Simultaneously combined, we're told on web pages they cancel each other. They don't cancel each other. They convert themselves into real power. But it's very special real power. It's real power of a -1 power factor. And nobody calls that reactive for a very good reason, because it's not reactive power. Yet it is, because it was born of the two parents who are reactive. Yet the daughter that comes out of that union between the two parents is real power. So we've just done a conversion. Now, and that gives us -1 power factors. Now, if I take real power and I pass it through a lonely capacitor, I've just converted real power into reactive power, because I applied real voltage and I got out of it a displacement of current from voltage. You know, voltage divided by resistance is now displaced from simple voltage by 90 degrees, either leading or lagging. I've just done a conversion of real power into reactive power. So Because when you look at the trigonometric function of the sine function on the zero, the four quadrant positions of a cycle of oscillations, that's what I see happening. When you use either positive 90 degrees, which is leading power factor, you know, current leading voltage by 90 degrees, or if you do negative 90 or positive 270 to get lagging power factor, in the real world, you get 0 degrees power factor, and that's what people are taught. Oh, you get 0 degrees, it's worthless. It's 0 degrees. No, it's not. You've just converted over to the other side, which just happens to be either a positive one in the case of 90 degrees or a negative one in the case of negative 90 degrees. So in other words, when it's capacitive reactance, it's positive. Excuse me, it's when it's capacitive reactance, it's considered positive one power factor in the reactive realm. But when we take the negative 90 degrees in the reactive realm, we get a negative one power factor. And so that's how they define the action, or the behavior, I should say, of a capacitor versus an inductor taken singly all by themselves. So that a capacitor is a leading power factor. The current leads the voltage by 90 degrees, but its power factor is positive 1. And they call that the generation of reactive power, because the capacitor is generating reactive power. It's not generating, it's converting. Holy shit. Oh, we are so fucked up over this topic. It's unbelievable. All we're doing is conversions. That's it. Now, when you combine two conversions, you get another conversion, because you're negating. See, now, by definition, real power is the consumption of power as a generalization across the board. All 4 degree points on the circle of oscillations, if we're talking about real power, it's the consumption of power. But when we're talking about reactive power, it's the generation of power, broadly speaking. But when we start putting in negative one as a power factor in either one of those considerations, real or reactive, now we've inverted that situation. So when we have 180 degrees cosine of 180 degrees in the real power world, we get negative one power factor. Now, instead of real power being by default being the consumption of power, now it's the generation of power, because we've inverted its function. Likewise, when we take the sine trigonometric function of negative 90 degrees, or positive 270 for that matter, indicating that we are using inductive reactance here, we get a negative 1 power factor, in which the reactive power is no longer being generated, because and all electrical engineers say this, they know this, they say that the inductor is consuming power. But it's what kind of power is it consuming? It's consuming reactive power, not real, because in the real world it's 0 power factor, because it got converted, it got switched over to the other side of apparent power in the realm of reactive power. And if it's a capacitor, it's positive 1, because you're consuming. No, excuse me. Well, no, you're doing the opposite to what the reactive power realm normally does, which is to produce power. So now, no, you're not doing the opposite. You're doing the same. Right, because it's a positive sine function, so it doesn't change anything. So the reactive realm is the realm of the generation of power. And so when you take the sine function of 90 degrees, positive 90 degrees, you get negative 1, which means, you get positive 1, which means you don't change anything. And so that's why they're able to say that you generate, that the capacitor generates reactive power. But when you take the cosine function of negative 90 degrees, you get 0 power factor, which shows, that you've converted out of the real realm and into the reactive realm. So what do you get in the reactive realm when you take the sine function of negative 90 degrees or positive 270? You get negative 1. And because reactive realm is, by default, the realm of the generation of power, of reactive power, so since we've negated, we have a negative 1 power factor when we take the cosine function of negative 90 or positive 270, now we have to say we're doing the opposite. Rather than saying that we are generating reactive power, now we have to say we're consuming it. And that's exactly what electrical engineers say about coils of wire. They, inductive reactance consumes reactive power, though. They don't say that. They don't say it consumes reactive power. They just say it consumes power. And anybody could think, oh, is that real or reactive that it's consuming? Because it makes a difference. You have to ask. You have to ask that distinction because that's the way it works. It's very precise to be articulate. When we're talking about electrical engineering, we can't afford to be sloppy. And they do so because they all think they know what they're talking about when they're being sloppy. But we've got 8 conditions, and for 4 of those conditions, no, 2 of those conditions of negative 1 power factor of real power or negative 1 power factor of reactive power, we have 2 different ways of describing it. So now we got 10 different ways of describing it. Just like we have 10 different, no, we have more than that. We have, no, that's right, we have 12 different ways of describing. No, are you kidding? No, wait a minute. We have 16 different ways of earmarking the degree measurement on the circle of oscillations, those 4 points of oscillation, because if we just take 0 degrees, it's also 360, right? And it doesn't matter whether it's positive or negative. It's well, we can do that too. But so that's 4 different ways. So that's really 4 times 4 is 16, doubled is 32. There are 32 different ways of describing your position on any one of the 4 quadrant positions of the cycle of a cycle of oscillations. 32 different ways. And it turns out that there's only 8 distinct ways, and each one repeats itself 4 times. You know, we can say it 4 different ways, each of those 8, but it turns out to be the same as just 8 different things, you know, 4 positions for reactive power and 4 for real. But we don't make all these distinctions. We don't talk about it. And so when I redo my chart on my essay, I have to say 32 different positions on the circle of oscillations. Right. 16 for real and 16 for reactive. Can you imagine? And that's just that. And then, you know, it's, oh my God, it talk about, so that's why we don't understand free energy and we get away with misrepresenting it. And the patent office says, oh, it violates the laws of physics. No, it doesn't. Physics has nothing to do with it. It's all about electrical engineering and taking full responsibility for what we're talking about in electrical engineering terms. We don't, and that's why we allow physicists to stick their nose where it doesn't belong. Because as electrical engineers, we don't take full responsibility for describing the situation in its entirety. We don't. We're sloppy. And you know, they say that. What was it? Paul Revere said, tyrants only get to do what they do because good men stand by and do nothing. That's literally why it happens. And so tyranny is being practiced by physicists being imposed upon electrical engineers because electrical engineers let them because they don't bother to describe the whole situation in very precise linguistical terms so that nobody's confused about what's going on. So if a child comes in and says, oh, what's going on here? Then you explain it explicitly so that the child can then go look up all those terminologies and know exactly what you're talking about if they're interested and capable. But nobody bothers because nobody bothers to weasel their way in to electrical engineering and criticize them for being sloppy. It's their own fault. They're sloppy. They're lazy. And so, of course, physicists can step in and say, well, we got to clean up this mess here. But they don't. They add to the confusion by being tyrannical about it and imposing their beliefs, which don't belong. Because they're physicists, when they want to talk about mass equals, or energy equals mass times the speed of light squared, they're talking about nuclear power. They're not talking about electrical power. Electrical power is confined to the valence shell of the valence electron shells of the atom. Not even the saturated electron shells have anything to do with electrical power. You know, it's a feature of the chemistry of how two copper atoms join together to form copper wire, or copper sheet metal for that matter, is that they have to use their valence electron shells to hold together. I mean, it's that, literally, that chemical function is literally the confined area of electrical engineering when it comes to matter. You know, how much involvement does matter have with electricity? Very little. Because as it is, the electron has very little mass, very little weight, and yet we say E equals mc squared? Bullshit. Bullshit. Mass has so little to do with it because the electron has so little mass. So what the hell are we bringing in E equals mc squared for? Oh, and it can't travel faster than the speed of light because E equals mc squared. It has nothing to do with it. You can have electricity travel faster than the speed of light because of wave mechanics. Now we're not even talking electrical engineering or physics for that matter. We're just talking about wave mechanics, which actually is a feature of physics, but it's not electrical engineering anymore. And it's certainly not quantum physics. It's classical physics, wave mechanics. And it has nothing to do with heat. You know, thermodynamics has nothing to do with thermodynamics. It simply has to do with the geometrical shape of the wave. If you change the shape of the wave, and this is a byproduct of converting from real power to reactive power. When you do that, you can change the sinusoidal shape of a wave and convert it into a triangle wave. And that's because you've joined together capacitive reactants and inductive reactants at the same time and converted over from 180 degrees separation between real current and real voltage into the reactive realm, and you end up getting negative, instead of getting reactive power, you're back in the real power. It's like you skipped the step of converting from real to reactive because you did it twice. And so, you see, so two negatives do make a positive in this instance, because when you combine two reactive powers that are in opposition to each other, you end up double negating your conversion from real to reactive, so that now you've gone from real to reactive back to real again, all in one step. And again, that's what confuses people. They don't understand what they've done. Oh, hey, Gewaltz. What a mess what a messy web we weave. if we had to rephrase the words of that famous author, that famous playwright. Hey, Gewalt. I should add, I forgot to mention that when we're talking about free energy, there's one other aspect that we have to describe, and that is the fact that the energy builds up. So how is that possible? Well, reactive power, by definition, or by one of its definitions, is lossless. It cannot be dissipated because it's not in the real realm of real power. It's in the realm of imaginary, or I should say complex number power, in which you've got the square root of negative 1 times some value, plus some value, making it complicatedly complex. It's a complex number. But, so it's not, you can't lose it. You can't spend it in the real world. You know, when we spend energy in the real world, it's like giving you a positive apple or I'm losing a negative apple. And that's a real, both of those are real number values. But in the realm of reactive power, we're not dealing with real numbers anymore. We're dealing with imaginary numbers and complex numbers, and so you can't lose it. You can't transfer it. It doesn't move. It doesn't go anywhere. You can't measure it. You can't use it. Well, yeah, you can infer it from your real power measurements, you know, by figuring out the phase angle, and then you can infer whether or not it's reactive or real, yada yada. But when it's reactive, it's not real. So you can't spend it, you can't move it around from place to place, you can't use it. It's called lossless for that reason. Or useless, but they prefer to say lossless. And so conservation of energy doesn't apply, because, for one thing, because you can't lose it, because it's not real. It's not real energy. You could almost call it potential energy, because reactive power can't be used, so it's a potentiality, it's potential energy. And that's why frequency is part of the equation for reactive impedance, you know, capacitive reactance or inductive reactance, because frequency is considered a potential form of energy. It's not kinetic, it's potential. Well, reactive power, that means reactive power is potential form of energy. That means capacitance, oh my God, is a form of potential energy, just as inductance is a form of potential energy. That's why they contribute to reactive power and modify it. Oh my God, this is earth-shaking. This is unbelievable. Anyway, moving right along. So, because reactive power is lossless, it cannot be spent, and all it can do is accumulate. But how does it accumulate? It accumulates because it recycles on top of the prior cycles. So when you get the conversion of real to reactive, each time it happens with each cycle, each conversion gets added to the prior conversion and accumulates, because it doesn't go anywhere. It hasn't converted out of the reactive realm back into the real realm, and so it accumulates in the reactive realm. And that's why you get this exponential rise of power. Now, the way that the simulator, environment of the simulator, arranges things in terms of base 10 number system. And so when you look at the virtual oscilloscope tracing of the growth of reactive power, it's always done at the power of 10. At the rate of escalation is at the power of 10. So it's logarithmically base 10 growth rate, exponential growth rate. But in the real world, that's not the way it works. It works on the basis of the power of 2. And this has been confirmed by people who have studied the matter, and they call it parametric oscillation or parametric amplification or parametric excitation. You know, like a child swinging on a swing. Well, I always thought there was only one way to swing, to get yourself going on a swing. You move, you bend forward, you lean forward in your seat, or you lean, and then you lean backwards, and you have to do it at the right point in time of the oscillation that you're going through, that you're trying to set up. But there's another way to do it. But first you have to get yourself started that way, and then once you get started, there you can switch to another method. And that's wherein you stand up in your seat, and then you squat down in your seat. And you have to do it at the right point in time. And that's actually more efficient. It takes less energy. You can really rack up your swings that way. Because leaning forward and backward, it takes a lot of energy. But standing up and sitting down, you get better results with less cost of energy. So you're using the principle of leverage to get better results by spending less to get more results. Well, that's the same thing I do. I do a conversion from real to reactive. It's now lossless and has to accumulate. And based on the frequency, will determine how quickly does it accumulate. But it's base 2, even though the simulator tells me it's base 10. That's just the way it organizes everything when it does its calculations. It doesn't mean it happens any quicker or any faster or any more intense. It just says, well, I'm going to wait until I get to the point of time that's 10 times later in time, 10 cycles later, rather than 2 cycles later, for me to compute the growth rate. So everything's organized differently, but it doesn't mean it's any quicker. It just means it's organized differently, so it makes it look like it's quicker when it's not. But be that as it may, the frequency regulates the speed of the escalation of reactive power as it accumulates, as it recycles, and accumulates based on its recycling. So it accumulates because it recycles, and it accumulates at the power of 2. It doubles itself. With every cycle, it becomes doubled quantity of reactive power. But that's because it's lossless. It has nowhere to go until we make it convert over back into the real realm, and then we've lost it because we've done the conversion into the real world. Oh, boy.